Welcome back to the second part of episode one of the Swim Tribe podcast, where we are going to continue the conversation of my mother and porn burgers.
Porn burgers, I seem to remember getting a text from you.
I've got a picture of my mum eating something that's got porn written on it. But it affected my interpreter as well. We're in Russia. Porn actually means royal. But it's... and you don't... So you've got a right royal mouthful. But oh, that was such a good trip. I look on that really fondly. I'm so glad that mum came. And I wouldn't have felt right not taking my mum, because she's been through so much with me. And when I stopped swimming and when I lost my identity, I was rough. I put my mum and my family through so much hell, really.
But that's part of the problem, you know, that you and I both went through, is that, you know, from an early age, your identity is all mixed up with a big ingredient of sport, of high level sport, and then when that is lost, you know, sorry, the dogs are probably a cat chasing a cat actually, but when that's lost, you lose part of your identity. You know, I'm no longer Jonty the rugby player, or Jonty who's, you know, I become Jonty. Oh, maybe he could have, Jonty. Oh, maybe, yeah, but he had a back, you know. And I don't want pity. And I don't think you want pity. You just want to get on with it. And it's just, you know, to me, you end up scratching around. I certainly would. It took Mrs. W to get me back. She got me skiing. I'd never skied before. That was my saviour, because I found a sport that I absolutely fell passionately in love with. And that then drove the weight loss and the fitness, because, you know, I was just sitting on the sofa eating crisps. And that was my salvation back, you know, finding that sport. And then that drove the weight loss and all to the journey of where I ended up in the ice. I mean, I've always swum open water and I've always swum, but, you know, I'd lost it. But that the skiing was that's what unlocked everything for me, is finding that passion again that I thought I'd 100% lost when I lost the rugby.
I think for me it was more, I woke up one day and I was really, really tired of feeling really bad, and I'd got somebody fantastic, well, a couple of people had really helped me when I was like, my mum has always been brilliant and so has my family, but when I went to uni, I went in a bit later because I wasn't in a position to go, and I found after being there for a bit that actually I counted as being a disabled student, which I'm not, but I was just having a tough time, and the medication I was on was struggling with my processing. So I got disabled student allowance, and through that I was allocated a mental health support worker who ended up becoming my mental health mentor going forwards. And I also had a conversation with, I'd picked kind of the wrong route at uni and wrong subjects, and I hated it. I was just about to drop out, and we went to Berlin, and I had a conversation with one of the lecturers there about, firstly, why we were sat doing our work when we were doing it, because everyone else was out. And I said, well, I wanted to do it, get it done, and then go out so I don't have to think about it the rest of the evening, and we can just go and have some fun. And he just started chatting to us, because I'd not come across him on any of my other modules. And I was just saying I was enjoying certain bits of the course, but I actually hated it, and I probably wasn't going to come back for third year. And he invited me to go and have a chat with him and talk to him about what I liked and who I was and my background. And we identified that actually the way forward in my studies was to go and do some research and do my dissertation on losing your identity. And we looked at it, I did a geography degree, but we looked at it as a geography of fat, because the thing that I had the biggest hang up with when I was at uni was my weight and the way that I looked, and I wasn't comfortable in my own body. And whilst doing this research, I did it autoethnographically. So that meant that I wrote a diary, and I also interviewed people that had been in a similar situation than me. And I interviewed the girls that I used to swim with and one of the guys, and I linked it to the theory of prisons. And it's called liminality, where you go into this like state of like betwixt and between two identities, and they linked it to prisoners. And I looked at it and thought, actually, with the research that I've done, and it's not linear. It really isn't. It's a cycle. And you'll find something you like, you'll dabble in it, you'll go through it, and you'll come out the other end a new person. And actually, you're still not quite right. And until you've finish that cycle of almost going upwards at the same time and you find something that you like, then you're able to move on and rebuild yourself. And that rebuilding is really continuous. And out of the people that were on my team, there was people with like body dysmorphia like myself. There was people who were making themselves sick. There were people who'd got really fat with alcoholism. And it was all these things that the issue had never been addressed and had lost so much overnight. So I'm forever grateful for Phil Jones, who took the time to speak to me. And honestly, I wouldn't be here if there hadn't been that conversation, because I was feeling that rough. And my mental health mentor, Faye Hunkins-Walcott, who unfortunately passed away a couple of years ago, but she gave me such a toolkit to be able to identify actually where am I going and where do I want to be. And I think from what I gleaned from it all was like, with expectation becomes disappointment. And I've got to try and remove any expectation. So every single situation I am in now, I go in it completely empty-minded.
You see, I go in with complete, not compete. Just finish. That's why I was slightly peeved that I couldn't. I don't think I was in good enough ice nick to do the 1K, even though I was going to do it. I don't think I'd have finished it. I think I wasn't. I think my body was still reacting to losing all the weight. And I've put on a bit of weight in lockdown, but I think it's muscle, actually. If you look at I'm pretty certain it's muscle. My ski, I bought a ski erg to try and keep some upper body fitness for swimming. And my ski erg times are coming right down. So I know I'm putting muscle on because I can smashing the times on that. I sort of get what you're saying, because that body dysmorphia, I think I certainly remember looking in the mirror thinking I still looked like I did when I was my prime, fit as a butcher's, playing top level rugby. And I wasn't. I was 10 stone heavier or 11 stone heavier, but I still thought I looked like that, and I didn't. And I sort of, you know, it's the biggest con in the world is that you think you're all right and you think, you know, I look slim, and I didn't, and I wasn't. And I carried on because I didn't change anything. And you know, what you just said about finding that thing that unlocked it, mine was skiing. And it was Mrs. W that got me into skiing, because I hadn't even thought about skiing. I'd never skied with two legs. I was always playing rugby. And that was the thing. And I don't know, if I hadn't had the weight loss of surgery, would I still be? Yeah, I'd probably be as miserable as sin, actually, in comparison to what I am now. I'm a happy grump, everyone tells me, because I'm always grumpy, but I don't think so. I feel really happy all the time. But yeah, you know, it is tough, and you do, you know, your identity does get bound up in things like sport, and especially as a young kid, and the pressures that are put on you. And I think for swimmers, you know, it's even more so, because there is that leanness that you have to face with rugby. You can find a position that fits your body type, whereas as swimmers, you're a swimmer. There are certain things you have to look and be like as a body to get through that water quickly. You can't be a prop forward, you know, and be a successful swimmer.
Yeah, you're right. And you're naked as well. You're very, very naked. You're so bare. Maybe gymnastics and that kind of thing as well. Like,
yeah, yeah, add it all in. You know, and the performance is down to you. You know, I'm on a rugby pitch with 14 other blokes and we lose. I can blame, well, I'd always blame the backs because it was always their fault. But, you know, there's other people to blame. Yeah, I may have screwed one bit up, but that might not have caused us to why we lose. There are other reasons. But if I get into a swim and I'm racing you, for example, and we're going to do a 250, the only reason I lose is because I haven't trained as hard, whatever, 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 so that I know that I'm quicker than you when we come to race. And that's down to me. And that puts a lot of pressure on a young girl or boy at the ages of 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, who have aspirations to go to you know, into the national teams. And then you add on the fact that for some reason, swimming always has to be involved really early mornings, where at least with rugby training, it was at 2 o'clock in the afternoon or 11 o'clock in the morning. Swimming is always, you know, you've got to get up, you've got to get your parents up as well. So there's the pressure there. And then and all of that into a young body and a young mind. I think, you know, you could argue, I'm surprised more don't, you know, more of your, you know, people don't suffer when they don't. And it's brutal. You know, you either make the times or not. And, you know, I was sitting next to a guy at the Lymph Centre once before the London Olympics, and he was trying to get into the adaptive rowing team. He was the same amputee, low leg, me. And he'd been training for the team by like, because he, whatever trials distance on the skier, he missed out by like 1/4 of a second, which is nothing. And that's why, you know, I'm always surprised that, you could argue, are we surprised that more people don't suffer? Maybe they do. Maybe they suffer in silence. And maybe that's all part of the problem. Maybe that's what we're seeing. We'll see, you know, come lockdown, people will have suffered more. But I think, you know, the explosion of open water swimming is in lockdown has been one of those things that maybe, you know, there is something about getting out into nature. It's something that I've always told people about. You know, I've always been a big, just get out and let nature hug you. You know, whether you're on a mountain skiing or up walking or with riding a horse up in the mountains, nature has a very, very interesting way of calming you down. And I find that the ice is like turbocharge of that process. It's like 5 minutes in 1.5 degrees that we did last Sunday, and you're buzzing. It's 5 minutes.
It's like, you know, a defibrillation of nature, isn't it? It's like,
it's like that. I put it down to people, say, what's it like? I said, do you remember when you were young and you could do those bank holiday sessions in the pub, in the gardens in the summer, and you'd start off and you would just, ice swimming is a bit, is not like that. It's the opposite. Ice swimming is like just smashing tequila slammers down for 5 minutes. You end up in the same place, but the journey is completely different. And that to me is what I like ice swimming. It's why I think it's good for you, is because you can get that benefit, that mental benefit, really quite quickly. Just by literally getting into some really cold water, and getting out.
This is a counterbutt that I've been about recently. Is it that cold? Is it the actual physical cold of it, or is it the fact that we have found a common goal and common identity with others, and we're doing it together, normally away from lockdown, in just a general life? Because I get such as good feelings by going and running long distances, or park run, for example. People get the same kind of benefits as doing a park run. It's just, I prefer swimming in cold water because I like swimming and I like the cold. But for some people, they just don't like that at all. So are we being, is there kind of a, not placebo, but...
I know what you mean. I think there's difference. I think people are different, and people's psyche are slightly different. And so I think if you went and sat in John's ice tub for 15 minutes and you're having a bad day and you just get into the ice tub and then you got out, you would feel pretty good afterwards, and you'll have had no social interaction. The social interaction, I think, gives you is another layer, or it's like a tapestry of life. You know, you can have a tapestry that's got 2 or 3 colours on, or a really intricate one. There's still a tapestry. They're still lovely to look at, but they're different and they're more intense. I think the social side of it, I think some people are more social than others. And so if you're a social person, it matters. I've got mates, you know, whose social life's not being distracted. Theirs was down the pub because their job is they're on their own a lot of the time. So they got their socializing down the pub, and obviously they've struggled in lockdown. I know that I'm a social person, and I'm missing chatting. You know, I swim in my swim group, my unofficial swim group, are all women. So I don't have, on an actual meeting up with men, I haven't really met up with too many blokes, apart from I'm in a bubble with my parents. So I see my dad. So my mates that I'd go to the pub and watch rugby with, I haven't seen for ages. And, you know, I think I miss that, but I'm keeping sane because I can do the swimming.
One thing, though, that I do need to say to this is that when I started swimming outside, my mental health still wasn't brilliant. And it was significantly better than it had used to have been. But I used to get into the water and the world would slow. There was a big mental health benefit to me. The longer that I've done this, I don't have that so much anymore. And I don't know whether it's because I'm mentally in a better place, or those euphoria, if you like, doesn't happen anymore because it's a physiological adaptation. And I don't know if if when these people that have gaining it for the first time and going in for mental health reasons now and enjoying it and getting those highs, are they then going to get so addicted that they have to do it every day? Or is it going to be a point where their bodies get so adapted that, that they lose that as well? And I don't know if I'm only speaking from my personal experience here.
I know what you're saying. It's like, you know, it's like adrenaline junkies. They may start off doing a bungee jump, then they'll go parachuting, and the next thing you know, they're base jumping. I think for everybody, it's probably different. But I think with the water, at least with the swimming, there has to be a break because the water warms up. To me, I like being in nature. I love being in the water. And I miss it. So I think for some people, because of, you know, I have lots of other different things. You know, I ride my bike, I ski, I weight train, I take the dogs out. I have quite a short attention span, so I do lots of different things, which is probably why I'll never be the greatest long distance swimmer or a cyclist or anything like that, because I just get bored. It's like 10K swims for me is like, that's, you know, that's enough. And it's not physical. It's not a physical thing. It's just I end up skiing ski runs in my head when I'm swimming to get me through it. Does that, I don't know. But I was going to ask you, when you're doing a long 10K swim, or you can't have a short 10K because it's a 10K. But when you're doing a decent swim, I sometimes wonder what happened to those last 40 minutes when I'm swimming. It's like I don't remember those laps. Do you still get that, or do you find that to get to that stage of, it's like a zen, isn't it? It's like everything, you know, to me, that's when it's all working properly. Do you find you have to go further and further and further to get to that zen-like state of, I don't actually remember the last hour of swimming?
I feel like I get it more in a pool because I can because when I swim outside, I like looking. I like the fact that I'm in nature, and normally I'm going on a journey, it's like yourself, an A to B swim. Mm. When I've done a swim more often, so if it's like there's a route that John and I will do in the mornings, on the third, fourth, fifth time I've done it, then yes, I can, because I know the river by then, and I don't have to be on, well aware. But I find that I get it in the pool, and I can, it's pull and paddles for me. So I've got some finesse paddles where you just put your thumb through it. And it's all about having the right catch and with a pool boy in it. And if I'm in a lane where it's not busy and I'm not dodging people, I can close my eyes, and I have known to close my eyes and just be like, oh, okay, where am I? And I can, but it has to be completely the right situation and the right circumstances. And I have to be on my own normally as well, or just
one
person. But I can, but
it's... My problem is I shut my eyes open water swimming. Because I just do, and I don't know why. I just do, and sometimes, and that's the next thing I look up, and I'm like, oh, getting shouted at because I've gone way off course, and the boat's wondering what the hell I'm doing and stuff like that.
I think, but,
yeah,
so well trained as a youngster with swimming outside, I am straight as a die when going.
Yeah,
and I know I am, and that's just because I sight every stroke, and I'm very conscious of where I am physically in a lake. If I'm in a river and there's no markers, then I enjoy it a lot more because it's less rigid. It's much more chilled out and flexible.
Do you find the cold affects your ability to swim straight?
It did a little bit in Russia at the end, on the last couple of lengths. But I think because I'm so well...
disciplined.
Coached. Coached. For example, when we swam in Bled, I know it was a bit warmer in this year. I'd gone and had a look at the course the night before, and I knew exactly where my sight lines were going to be, and I knew where I wanted to be in the pack when we started. And I'll kind of study the course and know where I'm going to swim and go and look at it from the different angles. And when I'm swimming in a pool, like Cheltenham was different. We had the black line, so I just followed that.
Yeah.
But when we were swimming in Russia, I was more disorientated at the end because it was the first time I'd done that kind of distance in that temperature. And yeah, I got my hands a little bit on the rope and the last, I think it was the last like four lengths or so, I kept hitting the rope. I was feeling like I was hugging it a little bit too much and trying not to hug the rope at all. But yeah, and I know when I'm training at the moment, because I still class the swim as training, like going this morning, that's training. But then that's my head, and that's just
see, I don't know, we were in and we were trying to just turn the arms over, and I do suffer from it takes me a long time for my body to allow me to swim distance in the ice without having to revert back to breaststroke. You know, when you start off and you always find you're trying to catch up with your own breath.
Yeah.
And that I've struggled a bit this year, probably because we haven't really practiced it, because I haven't, if I'm going to do that, I do it down at the lake where we've got recovery and I can really push things and work things out and all of that. To this morning swim, I must admit, I do feel quite a bit tired today, but then I did a double training session yesterday. I did a double on Wednesday, a double on Tuesday. So, you know, yeah. And this is the way I go back to what I'm saying. I'm not 19 anymore. But it's sort of, part of that is probably paranoia about making sure I don't put on too much weight in lockdown, because the ability, you know, I still have the you know, effectively, I still like to eat. I just can't eat very much, but I can eat a lot of snacks if push comes to shove. And so, you know, there's probably, I still have that pressure on me. I still, you know, and just going back to the mental side, I still record everything I eat, and I have done since for 4 years. So I can look back 3 years ago and see what I ate on the 19th of February or 20th of February 3 years ago. And I still do that. And that's the one thing that keeps me in check, because I'm utterly paranoid that I don't want to put the weight on. And it's not just because of looks, health, but it's also, you know, it doesn't do my legs any good. You know, carrying around the weight that I was carrying doesn't do my ankle. I mean, I've had enough bloody operations on my ankle. Do you have to be a bit careful? So I'm not so sure that, I don't think there's ever a cure. I think you just, as you get older, and, you know, you find different ways of dealing with everything, and your coping mechanisms, whatever, through life just become more refined. And actually, you're probably braver at changing your coping mechanism. Going, oh, I'll try that. Oh, I heard somebody's done that. Oh, I'll try that. That's probably part of the reason we've seen more people get into open water swimming. It's because they go, I open water swim, I find it really good mentally in lockdown. Right, I'll try that. And it's been one of the sort of the accessible things to people to be able to do across all age spectrum, body shapes, sizes, and all of that, which is great. You know, I just hope people keep up with it when we come out of lockdown.
I do as well, but I also hope that people don't get too blasé about it, because some of the things I've been seeing have been worrying. But once paid venues open up again, I hope that people return to them and get the proper education if they've started dabbling. One thing I did want to ask you was, with your weight loss, was that a very similar process to relearn your body as it was when you lost your leg?
Yeah. Learning to walk again is painful. So I lost my leg on the 19th of May. I came out of my mother's birthday, June the 6th. And a friend of mine was getting married in Yorkshire, and I wanted to be able to wear a leg at her wedding. And I think her wedding was June, July. So I had about 4 weeks to try and get my stump into some form of shape to put a leg on it. And that was a really painful process. The weight loss actually was easy, because I just didn't want to eat, and I still really don't. I get head hungry. I don't get hungry. My body sort of says, I think I need energy because of the training I'm doing. Like when I get out of the lake this morning, I was needed sugar because, you know, and all of that. And I follow your advice, having jelly babies getting in there. The Vimto jelly babies are my current preferred ones. Mm-hmm. So losing the weight, it per se was easy in comparison to learning to walk again. Learning to live with a false leg and a buggered other leg and the rest of me, I suggest, is probably a lot harder than learning, because I'm now like a teenager with this new godlike body of mine. Joking. I'm now like a teenager. I feel like I've been, you know, in some respects, you know, biblical terms, I feel like I've been reborn. I feel like a literally an 18, 19 year old, you know, probably as fit as I've nearly as ever been. And so all the experience has been good since I had the operation. Mm-hmm. And even the pain of learning to adapt to the cold again, when we were in Wales and, you know, all of that sort of stuff. And in Russia, I all see that as good. It's just, I just accept things are different every time. This year it's been about my hands. Last year it was more about my leg and my stomach. My stomach, I think, is getting worse, interestingly enough. Certain things I can't eat at all, really, anymore. Whereas learning to walk again was painful. Mm-hmm. And it continues to be painful. You know, I would rather swim. The one sport that doesn't hurt is when I swim in warm waters in the summer. I take my leg off, nothing hurts. Cycling, skiing, all of that, there is always pain. There's always stump soreness. Irrespective of the other pain, there is always issues going on with my stump. The swimming is, to me, it's a balm. You know, that's the only way I can put it. It's a balm. And
mobility. It gives and that's, you full mobility in water.
I get full mobility in the water. And there was a slightly, I don't know why, there was a controversial picture put on Facebook about a guy all dressed up underwater, standing. He was underwater, but it was his wheelchair, and it all seemed to have caused a load of grief. And I sort of looked at that photo, and I was like, I get that. I get the freedom. For me, it's a freedom from pain. You know, if I take the dogs out for a walk, it hurts. If I go for a run because I'm trying to train for these stupid things I decided I was going to do, trust me, it properly hurts. And I'm having a high pain threshold, you know, I can literally wear a hole in my stump that then takes 6 to 8 weeks to heal. Swimming doesn't do that to me. Swimming is just bliss.
It's interesting you should say that, because there was a pro wakeboarder, Brad Smith, who ended up having an accident and turned quadriplegic. And he does a lot of stuff. Like, you see him on Instagram. He does a lot of stuff in the water. And just he goes with a team and they weight him down and he stands up in the water. And it's like, that freedom is... must just be phenomenal for him. And I know this is probably slightly dangerous, but he's got a team around him. Going back to that team thing, around him.
Team.
And
I couldn't do, we couldn't swim in the ice and push the distances that we push. Or we saw the you know, a world record distance the other week, 3.5K. You can't do any of this. You cannot race in the ice without a team around you that you trust to pull you out and that will sort you out if you've taken it slightly too far. You just can't do it. Or you can do it, but you're going to end up in one place, and that's in the ground. And that's it. That's as simple as that. But the freedom, I get those photos of freedom, but the freedom from wearing a limb. You know, I take my leg off to go to bed, which is lovely. I've always said to the ladies, it's probably similar as some ladies say, well, you know, the first thing they do when they get home is they take their bra off from work. There's a soreness. I don't know if it's similar, but it seems similar to me. Is blokes take their leather shoes off and put their slippers on. It's more comfortable. My leg is very comfortable, but it's very comfortable for wearing a leg. It isn't. I unclip my leg under the desk that I'm sitting at because if I keep it clipped on, it hurts. I just accept that. I accept that in life there is pain. But if I do lots of pain, then there's lots of good. It's yin and yang, isn't it? Black and white, all of that. That's the way I view life. It's an acceptance. If you want to come and do any sort of sport, you know, it's going to be boring. It's going to hurt. The benefits to me are just fantastic. Doing the channel maybe one day. I'm doing a relay, hopefully in July, if we can get in. And to me, that would be a mental thing, because I'm pretty certain I'm built well enough and fit enough to swim the distance. It's the mental thing. And that's probably where I struggle in all of this. It's probably why I struggle in the ice. It's a mental game for me, because I think I have the chassis I certainly have got the heart and lungs to do it. With my heart rate being so low and all of that, it's a mental thing. It's can I push myself like you can push yourself? Can I push myself for that length of time? For that, can I suffer enough to achieve that goal?
For me, I still have the same mental battles. Like Mark Guest told me once, Caroline, I can't remember what he calls it. Sorry, Mark. The analogy is like you leave your brain on the side. And I had a swim with Neil a couple of weeks ago. I couldn't get in. I got up to my thighs, turned around, I was like, shit, I need to get out. Got out. Like, right, Caroline, put your brain on the side. Put your brain on the side and get in. And I did. Put my brain on the side, got in, had a lovely swim. But it's fine.
We all know that I'm the king faffer when it comes to ice swimming. Yeah, and anyone can try and take that crown off me. You're gonna have to bring your A game to the A faffing game. Yeah, I know you think you're getting nowhere near as good. The thing I like about racing, and I was telling a young lady that I'm helping swim through this winter, who can get in brilliantly apart from her hands. And I said, the thing that I love, one of the things I love about the racing is there is no opportunity to faff, because as you know, we say, take your robe off, you get into the water, you look at the referee and they set you off. The opportunity for faffing goes. And my fear is pain in my ankle. That's what I'm fearful of when I'm faffing. It's, I know this is going to hurt and I know how much it's going to hurt. I need to have that mental fortitude to push through, because I'm intelligent enough to know that if I can get in and just swim 250 meters or whatever, the small loop at Hatfield, that I come out and my smile is huge. I get my eyes smile and my eyes tan. But that barrier, that mental barrier of, and sometimes I've been like you and I haven't been able to get in, and Leon and people are shouting at me and threatening to take my cake privileges off me. But it's a real, that fear of pain, because I know how much my ankle hurts. It's been torturous some days. This year has been a lot better and I don't understand why, but it's still, and I think that's why I faff. My faffing, I think, is down to my ankle, the pain that I feel in my ankle.
I know what my faffing's down to, and that's that I know how much it's going to hurt. But what I am going to do, I don't want to, but I feel like I'm going to have to. I'm going to have to ask you my last question now, and I ask everybody this.
Can I take a bite of my crumpet?
Yeah, take a bite of your crumpet. What? Oh, it's got Marmite on it, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
What flavour is
it? Chili Marmite.
Not sure. The question is, I ask everyone this, what three bits of kit do you think all outdoor swimmers should invest in?
Okay, mine is a decent changing robe, because I spend a lot of time faffing around with legs and stuff like that, and I need my changing robe to do two stuff. This year, my foot has got cold. I really love my new Arctic boots that I put on. Made a huge difference, not only to keep my foot warm after I swim, because I've got Arctic soles, I don't slip on the ice. And if I lose my left leg when I'm walking on ice, I'm over. So that's the second one. So a good pair of warm boots. So I think a lot of people forget that. And I think the third piece of kit that I would suggest, I'm sort of toying, but I'm probably a decent thermos flask that if you get the shakes, you can still drink from.
Yeah. Yes. So I used to have a straw and a cup. This year, the best drinking vessel that I've got is, do you remember when Waitrose used to do a free tea and coffee with the card? Well, they stopped giving out the cups, so you had to get a plastic cup. And their plastic cups, it cost £2, but they've got this nice little shaped top on it. So you can get these thermoses for 20, 30, 40 quid. So I have one of those cups with my tea bag in it. And then I have a hot water flask, like a chili bottle, with enough. And I just top it up. And they are fantastic. £2. Or they were.
So I've got different ones that I like. The other thing I would suggest to all swimmers out there is, if you want to, is use a Turkish cotton towels rather than microfiber towels.
Mm-hmm.
Get Turkish cotton. They're really thin. They pack down. They absorb a lot of water, and they don't put microfiber into the water system.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be my sort of green hat on, which, as you know, I'm not the biggest green person in the world. And the great thing about those is they pack well, so you can take them abroad, and they don't take up much space and all of that. But in all honesty, to me, the biggest, I couldn't have done what we do this winter without the changing robes.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's a huge debate online about which is the best changing robe. The best changing robe is the one that suits you the best. And that suits you from a price point, from coverage. And the only thing I would suggest is go long arm over short arms. I've got short arm ones. And I wish I had long armed ones.
I've got two short arm ones and I wish I got long ones. Yeah. Actually, was our robes from Russia that they gave us in Russia?
Yeah, but mine's a little small. I find it a little tight. It's tight. I can't really get changed under it. It's a bit. It's great, and the Velcro is much easier. Talking about extreme things, Velcro to wrap somebody around and Velcro it shut so they're out of the wind rather than zip is much quicker. And I've been trying to tell some of the new swimmers I've been swimming with about making sure that they prioritize their clothes are all set out richly, and they do it every time they swim so they can do it quicker. Put a zip on, if you've got a dry robe or a Charlie McLeod or whatever, put a half, quarter zip it up so you're not faffing with shaking hands trying to get it in. So you can just step into it and zip it back up and then get changed. It's these little things that matter.
That's a tip that Claire says. So I tried it in the last clip with the last group, and we just struggled a little bit. But I don't zip mine up because I don't change under it. So I put mine on, I walk to the to where my towel is, and I put it on the floor, and I stand on my robe. I change under it in the summer, but not in the winter. But
see, so what we do is we go to the charity shop and buy an old yoga mat, kit mat, cut them in half, and I have one of those with me. So that's what I sit on and stand on if I need to stand on. Cost me £2.
I got one of them. An old swim flow. I've got one of them in my car, but the last couple of weeks I've just been chucking my dry robe on the floor because it's been so cold. But yeah, it's been good. Thank you so much for coming and joining me. I've really enjoyed that. It's been super mega interesting, and
it's been lovely to see you. We just need to sort out going swimming again when we can.
Yeah, we do.
If you liked what you'd heard today, please give us a like and follow on your podcast source. Also, we are on Instagram at the Swim Tribe Podcast. All new episodes will be announced on there. Thank you.